I speak to you in the name of God, Creator, Redeemer, and Sanctifier. Amen. Please be seated. If you are wide awake in the darkest part of the night, it can feel like the loneliest place on earth. When it is pitch black outside and the rest of the world is hushed, it can feel that no one else even knows you exist, or that you are awake, or knows of the thoughts that keep circling around your brain. If you are peering out the window into the inky darkness, that time well before dawn can get filled with thoughts and worries and doubts that can disturb your soul, worry your heart, knock you off your well-planned and organized life. Perhaps you know this place. Perhaps you've only read about it. But it is seen and known by many of us, some for days and nights on end. For some, it is just occasional. The darker voices from somewhere within can sneak into the front of our mind. But it is here that we can discover a new light. Mystics often describe a dark night of the soul, and as the name suggests, it is related to those feelings in the middle of the night when the darkness seems to be pushing in a little more. The dark night of the soul is a time where God feels silent, distant, simply not present, and we cannot understand why. For what we long for most is to have a closer walk with God. Many famous people knew very well about this dark night of the soul. Famous spiritual leaders, saints of the church, spiritual guides, faithful people. It is something that is part of the pilgrimage of faith. But too often, we might explain it away as if we no longer have faith, that we no longer are able to connect with God, that we are alone in this world and God is not with us. I've discovered, and I'm sure that if you have experienced this dark night, you know it as well, that this time of darkness and feelings of being distant from God, or places where you question and dig deeper into faith, are actually necessary parts of growing closer to God. It is a necessary process to move away from feeling that you have all the answers about God to coming to a point where the questions about God do not matter anymore, rather simply knowing God's love, God's presence, feeling God's hand in your living is enough. Somehow we need the darkness to recognize God's light, a new light to guide us. Elie Wiesel was a recipient of the Nobel Peace Prize and a voice of eloquence and beauty to come out of concentration camps of World War II. Elie and his family were taken from their home in 1944 and sent to Auschwitz. He wrote a book about this time entitled Night. It's a fitting title as it explores some very dark times. He was just a teenager but witnessed the death of his family, the death of his own innocence, and the near death of his faith in God, the God of love. Despite the atrocities he lived with at that time, despite all the darkness he experienced all around him, he continued to witness to the presence of God. The light of God shone in him despite many opportunities to let the darkness simply win out. Elie Wiesel said this when receiving the Nobel Peace Prize. He said, "I remember it happened yesterday or eternities ago. A young Jewish boy discovered the kingdom of night. He said, I remember his bewilderment. I remember his anguish. It all happened so fast. The ghetto, the deportation, the sealed cattle car, the fiery altar upon which the history of our people and the future of humankind were meant to be sacrificed. He said, I remember he asked his father, can this be true? This is the 20th century, not the Middle Ages. Who would allow such crimes to be committed? How could the world remain silent? And he explained how this young boy turned and spoke to him now as an adult. He said, and then I explained to him how naive we were, that the world did know and remained silent. He said, and that is why I swore never to be silent whenever and wherever human beings endure suffering and humiliation. He said, we must take sides. Neutrality helps the oppressor, never the victim. Silence encourages the tormentor, never the tormented. He said, sometimes we must interfere. When human lives are endangered, when human dignity is in jeopardy, national borders and sensitivities become irrelevant. He said, wherever men and women are persecuted because of their race, religion, or political views, that place must, at that moment, become the center of the universe. Somehow, light must push back the darkness. Somehow, light will always shine in the darkness. Jesus told a parable of the gospel in the gospel for today that I think was all about this. It was a parable about the kingdom of heaven or the reign of God, and how it is like a group of 10 bridesmaids who have come with their oil lamps to meet the bride and bridegroom. They have come with eagerness and enthusiasm. They bask in the light of their lamps for a long time as they excitedly await the arrival of the couple. But they have to wait and wait. Wait and wait. The lamps go out. The enthusiasm wanes. They get bored. They fall asleep. The dark night of the soul starts to take over. Perhaps this waiting for the bridegroom was really simply a waste of their time. They thought it was going to fill about an hour or so, but it was demanding so much more of them. The darkness grew. The simple answers were not going to be enough. The pat answers were not working anymore. The frustration with wondering, is this really all there is, starts to win out. But at midnight, at the darkest time of that night, a shout goes up. The bridegroom has arrived. The darkness, the confusion, other things have clouded their vision. God is different than they were led to believe. All those simple answers are not working. The light they thought they had with them was not enough. They need more oil to get through. They were being beckoned into a deeper relationship, invited to go beyond the darkness and see that indeed God was greater, more expansive, more gracious, more present than they had ever even imagined. Not all of them were willing to do this. Some wanted to simply stay in the darkness and say that the bridegroom never arrived. But there were a number who discovered the light that they had was plenty enough. And then some. It brought them closer to the bridegroom. It allowed them to see in ways they had never imagined. It carried them through the dark night of the soul to discover anew that God was the center of all, the ground of all, the essence of all. Their light was enough to see that God was near. God's promise of light was true. In the book, The Cloud of Unknowing, the author writes this about going into a deeper level of prayer, a deeper connection to God, a fuller knowledge of the presence of the Holy One in our souls and in this world. For when you first begin to undertake it, all that you will find is a darkness, a sort of cloud of unknowing, You cannot tell what it is to expect you experience in your will, a simple reaching out to God. The cloud and the darkness is caused by our inability to understand God through the power only of our intellect. Our reason is too feeble to comprehend who God is, and we need instead to rely on our loving power, as it is called in the book. The cloud of unknowing says, by love God may be grasped and held, by thought never. It is this movement through the darkness of only wanting an intellectual path to God that opens instead to seeing God in love, in compassion, in gentleness, in encouraging one another, in sharing one another's joy, in beauty, in discovering holiness, in the incredible awesomeness of life. It is in pushing through the darkness that we get drawn to a light that can never be extinguished, that invites us to put down all of our narrow definitions and preconceived ideas and simply be in God's presence. For it is here that we discover the true essence of light and life. David Adam, in the Celtic Christian tradition, wrote this poem that seems to get to the heart of the light of the bridesmaids in their search to draw closer to God. He writes, "Where the mist rises from the sea, where the waves creep upon the shore, where the wrack lifts upon the strand, I have seen the Lord. Where the sun awakens the day, where the road winds on its way, where the fields are sweet with hay, I have seen the Lord. Where the stars shine in the sky, where the streets so peaceful lie, where the darkness is so nigh, I have seen the Lord." Really, what I'm speaking about is the spiritual life and seeing it as much more than a destination or only a following of a narrow set of rules, but rather it's a discovery that indeed we are those bridesmaids with our lamps pushing against the darkness of this world, the darkness of the dark night of the soul, the darkness of the middle of the night that pulls us down. But we are called once again to notice that we have in our hands a light with which to see the presence of God. Henry Nouwen writes, "The spiritual life is not a life before, after, or beyond our everyday existence. No, the spiritual life can only be real when it is lived in the midst of the pains and joys of the here and now." The psalmist prayed to God a prayer that seems to sum up what I'm offering to you this morning. From Psalm 139, the psalmist writes this about God: "Even the darkness is not dark to you. The night is as bright as the day. For darkness is as light to you." God promises